What happens when the line between protection and possession blurs beyond recognition? Once your mind pulls us into a world where obsession masquerades as devotion and safety comes with golden handcuffs. At a senator's funeral, prosecutor-turned-vigilante Hayden Bennett becomes irrevocably fixated on Callista Green, the daughter of the very man he believes deserved death. What begins as fascination spirals into something far more sinister as Hayden arranges every aspect of Callista's life to keep her within his orbit. He installs cameras in her apartment, follows her movements, and even steals her pearl necklace, leaving individual pearls on her nightstand, a twisted signature of his presence. "I can't let you go now that you're here," he confesses to himself. "If I did, it'd be like removing my lungs. I wouldn't fucking survive it." Both Hayden and Callista carry wounds that fit together unexpectedly. When Callista suffers a severe panic attack, Hayden responds with practiced ease, gathering her trembling form, guiding her erratic breathing. This reveals his past experience with his mother's addiction and panic attacks, nights spent holding her through episodes with the same soothing words he now offers Callista. The turning point comes when Callista reaches out to touch his face. For Hayden, this touch burns deeper and hotter than a supernova, shattering the protective walls around his childhood trauma. When she tries to withdraw, he catches her wrist, pressing her palm back against his cheek, desperate for the healing her touch provides. The most damaged people sometimes recognize something in each other that others miss. Their trauma bond becomes both poison and antidote, each simultaneously hurting and healing the other in a vulnerable dance that defies simple categorization. Callista's life has collapsed. Once a privileged senator's daughter, she now works at a coffee shop, lives in a dangerous neighborhood, and struggles financially. Her father's murder has left her desperate for answers, spending her limited funds on a private investigator who ultimately fails her. Despite these hardships, Callista shows remarkable resilience. She maintains her composure, continues working, and refuses charity, even returning an excessive tip from her ex-fiancé. Her quiet strength appears in small gestures, like comforting her father's staff at his funeral rather than seeking comfort herself. Beneath her composed exterior lies trauma. The night of her father's secretary's murder, Callista was drugged and assaulted at the children's shelter where she volunteered. These scars become crucial evidence later. Her journey is about reclaiming agency after repeatedly losing control. Her determination to find her father's killer, resistance to Hayden's possessiveness, despite her attraction, and refusal to be victimized reveal her inner strength. As she tells a friend about her stalker, "I'm not going to just sit around and wait to be murdered." The story's central tension revolves around the price of safety. When Callista reveals her stalker, Hayden offers protection with conditions. She must live with him, notify him of threats, and eventually give herself to him completely, without restriction. Hayden's protection is a double-edged sword. He provides security Callista desperately needs, safe housing, financial stability, and physical protection. Yet this comes with golden handcuffs. He tracks her phone, demands immediate responses, and becomes enraged when she disobeys his instructions. Callista recognizes the problem. "I may be falling into old habits of letting someone take care of me, but I remind myself it's likely temporary." Her friend suggests that with a stalker, the devil you know might be safer than the alternative. The devastating irony is that Hayden himself is the stalker, transforming their relationship from problematic to predatory, forcing Callista to confront the true cost of the protection she's accepted. Have you ever compromised your freedom for safety? How much control would you surrender to feel protected in a dangerous world? Communication serves as both weapon and bridge between Hayden and Callista, creating a dance of dominance and submission. Their exchanges feature calculated power plays, from Hayden's demanding texts requiring immediate response to Callista's deliberate defiance, like replying with a simple "yup" to his detailed instructions. Names function as markers of intimacy and ownership. Hayden calls Callista Callie, a nickname he claims exclusively, marking her as his territory. When she questions this possessiveness, he simply states, "I take what I want, Callie, and I want you." Recurring phrases form a possessive litany throughout their interactions. "You belong to me" appears in moments of passion and conflict alike. "I'm keeping you now that I've caught you" emerges as both threat and promise. "You can run, but I'll always chase you" becomes a refrain that both excites and intimidates. Even in tenderness, possession remains the underlying theme. After their first sexual encounter, Hayden tells Callista, "I take care of what belongs to me, especially you," revealing how care and control have become inextricably entwined in his mind. While romance dominates the narrative, the murder mystery provides crucial motivation throughout the story. Hayden initially believes he delivered justice by killing Senator Green for murdering his secretary, Kristen Hall. However, his investigation into Callista's past uncovers contradictory evidence. A photograph showing distinctive bruise patterns on Callista's throat from the night of Hall's murder raises questions. Medical records reveal she was admitted to a clinic that same evening with GHB in her system, found unconscious near Hall's body. The investigation uncovers a chilling connection. The chemical composition of the GHB in Callista's system matches compounds found in both the fatal pills that killed Hayden's mother and in Hall's bloodstream. This forensic link suggests a single perpetrator behind all three incidents. This creates a terrifying pattern. Two women are dead, and Callista could be next. Hayden's horror at possibly killing an innocent man complicates his relationship with Callista, who maintains her father's innocence. As the book closes, Hayden races to protect Callista from whoever drugged her, someone with intimate knowledge of both families who may be plotting their next move. Once Your Mine explores the uncomfortable gray areas of human desire, rather than offering easy moral judgments, Callista's realization that Hayden's violence seduces rather than frightens her forces us to confront the blurred boundaries between protection and possession, passion and obsession. The story challenges our responses to this toxic relationship. Do we recoil at Hayden's stalking or find ourselves captivated by his intense devotion? Do we condemn Callista for surrendering to someone who violated her autonomy or recognize the complex trauma bonds drawing her to him? By the novel's end, we face uncomfortable truths. Love and obsession can coexist, protection can become possession, and desire doesn't always follow moral boundaries. The scene where Callista confronts Hayden about her pearls perfectly crystallizes her simultaneous love and hatred for him, mirroring our own conflicted response. What does it reveal about human nature when darkness calls to darkness? Perhaps the most frightening truth isn't that monsters exist, but that we sometimes find ourselves drawn to them, seeing in their darkness reflections of something within ourselves.